Hello. My name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving: The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans: How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 100. I'm recording it on Saturday, February 21, 2009. The PE10 level today is 13, that's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com site. The title of this particular selection is Snowdrop. The title of the podcast is You Won't Believe the Truth About Stock Investing Until You Hear It 5,000 Times. I want to ask you a question. When you go to the grocery store and you have to buy toothpaste, what toothpaste do you buy? My guess is we all have to buy toothpaste. My guess is you buy one of the brands that is frequently advertised on television. Crest is advertised all the time, and Colgate. I don't know what the other big brands are. You know, maybe you buy one of the higher-end brands, one of these teeth-whitening brands, you know, that are sort of advertised on the high end. Maybe not advertised on television, but they're advertised, you know, Tom's. You know, they're advertised in health food stores, or, you know, they're advertised in magazines, but there's still some sort of marketing promotion behind them. The odds are, if I came up with some kind of toothpaste and I called it Rob Bennett Toothpaste, it might have the same ingredients as toothpaste, but if I put it there on the shelf next to the Colgate and the Crest and the Tom's, not too many people would buy it. I don't know what the percentage is of how much of the cost of toothpaste goes into marketing, but my guess is it's a pretty big percentage. What percentage do you think it is when Coke, you know, Coke, I don't know how much it costs. Maybe it costs 25 cents when you buy it on the grocery store, a can. But if you buy it in a vending machine, it can, some places it might still cost 50 cents. Some places it costs a buck. You go to one of these water parks. I went to a water park once, and I avoided spending money on food because I know how insane the prices are. And by the time we were leaving, it was so hot, you know, the sun was beating down, and just walking to the car, you know, my boy was thirsty and he wanted a water, and I was going to get him a water. I said, we're all sort of thirsty. It was $3. So I'm sure that the price of Coke, you know, it doesn't, obviously, it would have cost at least $3 to buy a Coke at that water park. And obviously, the ingredients of the Coke don't cost $3. You know, maybe 5 cents, maybe 10 cents. So if you pay a dollar for a Coke, where's the 80 or, you know, where's the 90 cents going? There's you know, they've got big buildings and they've got executives and they've got all this. They've got transportation costs. They've got insurance costs. So it's not that 90 cents is going to marketing, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's 50 cents. Those, you know, I didn't watch the Super Bowl. Did Coke have a commercial on the Super Bowl? They have a lot of commercials on television. They pay those people, you know, good money to come up with these jingles. These songs, you know, buy the world a Coke. The money has to come from somewhere. Take out these 30-second and 60-second ads in prime time. The money's got to come from somewhere. It comes from the price that we pay for Coke. So Coke doesn't cost a dollar to produce. When they charge you a dollar, maybe it costs 10 cents, and maybe all the other costs, you know, are 30 cents, and maybe there's 10 cents profit, and there's 50 cents going to marketing. Lots of people work in marketing today, and marketing is expensive. What's this got to do with stock investing? The title of the podcast is "You Won't Believe the Truth About Stock Investing Until You Hear It 5,000 Times." Is that a clue? The truth about stock investing is not emotional. The truth about stock investing, there are intellectual truths. And the most basic intellectual truth about stock investing is that valuations affect long-term returns. This is always true. It's not even possible for the human mind to imagine how there could ever be an exception to the rule. Valuations always affect long-term returns. Now, think with me here. Valuations always affect long-term returns. That means the value proposition of stocks is always changing. Whenever valuations change, the value proposition changes, the long-term value proposition. No possible exceptions. The biggest influence that the individual investor has on the results he obtains is the decisions he makes about his stock allocation. I think that's pretty much universally accepted. Do you think that we should be looking at the valuation level of stocks before we make allocation decisions? Sure sounds like it to me that we should. The valuation level affects the long-term value proposition. So since it's a big factor, it's obviously not possible to make an informed decision about your stock allocation without looking at the valuation level. But that's not what the dominant model of today tells us to do, is it? The dominant model is called passive investing. The thing you're passive about is your stock allocation. You don't change it. How come? Given the value proposition is always changing, and given that it's important what your allocation is, why aren't we changing our allocation when prices change dramatically? There's no intellectual case for that, is there? Zero. So it's got to be something else. If there's no intellectual justification, and yet 90% of us follow this model, it's got to be something else. What else is there? There's emotion. Now, emotion's a funny thing. Emotion's a tricky thing. If I were to ask you, if we were to, you know, watch the Super Bowl together, and we, you know, and a commercial comes on for Coke, and I say, how many cans of Coke you think you're going to buy? because of that commercial? What would you say? If you're like most people that I've run into, you would say, oh, I wouldn't buy any. I thought it was a cute commercial, made me laugh, but I wouldn't let it influence my buying decisions. I buy my Coke based on the taste and the price and things like that. I don't pay attention to the ads, the commercials. Doesn't affect me. Doesn't affect you. But it must affect somebody. Because it costs them millions of dollars to run these commercials. Millions and millions and millions. Some of them, yeah, I don't know what, I mean, the Super Bowl ones, they're millions to put on one of them. And some of these commercials for, you know, I'm not picking on Coke or Crest. Obviously, we advertise, you know, there's commercials for cars. There's commercials for, you know, record albums. There's commercials for everything. But if you talk to your friends, none of your friends, they'll all say, well, I enjoy some of the commercials. You know, some of them are funny. Some of them I hate. Some of them, they really annoy me. But I don't let that influence me. I don't bank my decisions. No, I when I'm looking for a car, I look at how good the engine is, you know, how convenient it is, if it's, what kind of gas mileage. When I'm looking for toothpaste, I want to know, is it, what's the taste like? What's the price? Nobody listens to commercials. Nobody is influenced by commercials. The poor companies that pay for the commercials, they know that nobody listens to them. They take polls, they take surveys, and they understand that nobody listens to them, but they just keep putting millions and millions into them with the thought that maybe someday we'll start to listen. Maybe one of these days the commercials will start paying off, and in the meantime, they'll just continue spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in the hopes that one of these days somebody will listen to one of their poor commercials. The reality, of course, is commercials influence our buying decisions, but they influence our buying decisions without us knowing it. The purpose of this podcast is not to rant against television commercials. Some of them are good. I'm not even against them. If they didn't have any television commercials, you wouldn't know what brand of toothpaste to buy or what cola to buy. You know, you could argue that they supply information. As usual, the rant is against passive investing. Passive investing has been marketed to us. It's been marketed to us. There's two big secrets to marketing. I mean, they're open secrets. Everybody knows them, but they're secrets to success. Secret number one is repetition. People believe not what, take a logical argument, an argument with an absolutely rock solid logic chain, and put it in a contest with an argument that makes zero sense, and repeat the argument that makes zero sense 5,000 times, and guess which one 90% of the population is going to buy into. 90% of the population is going to buy into the argument that was repeated 5,000 times that makes no sense. You may not like hearing that. You may be insulted. It doesn't flatter you for me to tell you that you will buy into pure gibberish if it's repeated 5,000 times. But that's the way it is. And if that wasn't the way it was, commercials wouldn't be repeated 5,000 times. When people spend their money, as companies do in commercials, they want the money to produce something. That's why commercials are repeated ad nauseum. Because that's what works. Now, it wouldn't hurt to ponder for a second, why does that work? Why does it work? I'm not an expert in the field. I have no doubt but that there are books written on it, and if you Google it, you could probably find something on it. Why repetition is so important. But I can give you, just sort of a common sense thought as to why it works. The human mind, commercials, marketing, essentially, again, I mean no criticism here, but they're intended to trick us. They're tricks of persuasion. When we hear something 5,000 times, there's some part of the human brain that says, there must be something to it. You've heard this message five... You see, if it's something that's important to you, if you were buying something... Oh, let me try to think of an example. If you're buying something for a particular purpose, you could not... You're not going to make your decision totally based on the repetition of a message. If you have a practical purpose, the thing you buy is going to have to satisfy that practical purpose, or you're not going to buy it. So the intellect does come into play in our purchasing decisions. Marketing is not the only factor. However, once the practical considerations are satisfied, the emotional considerations become the dominant factor. And in this modern consumer wonderland of ours, most of our decisions, most of our money decisions are not of the practical variety. Most of the things we spend money on are not things we need to stay alive. The things we need because things we need for social acceptance or because they flatter our egos or because they give us an opportunity to be more creative or to express our personality. In other words, we don't buy clothes to be warm for the most part. We buy clothes to say who we are, to let our friends know who we are and people we meet. But when it comes to what sort of message do you want to send about who you are, that's a message that is influenced by repetition. If your goal is to be perceived as cool, and you happen to see on television a message repeated 1,000 times that X style is cool. The X sunglasses are cool. The first time you see it, you might laugh. You might say, those sunglasses are stupid. Why is that idiot wearing them? But around the 500th time, you start to have doubts. You start thinking, the way your mind works is if I've seen 500 people wearing them, how stupid can they be? Maybe I'm stupid. And by the 1,000th time, you're thinking of buying them, and you're saying, I wonder how much they cost anyway. And by the 5,000th time, you're thinking, I really need those sunglasses. I'm out of step. There's all sorts of emotional needs that humans have. We want to belong. We don't want to be out of step. We don't want to be weirdos. And marketing is all about appealing to those emotions. Our investing decisions are primarily emotional decisions. The reason why the United States is going through an economic crisis today is because millions of us fell for one of the dumbest ideas that has ever been put forward by mortal man. The idea that it's okay not to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. And if we want to pull the economy back from the abyss, we're going to have to come to terms with that. There is no other way. And it wasn't just dumb people who fell for this idea. Some of the smartest people in the world fell for this idea. Eugene Fama is no dummy. Burton Malkiel is no dummy. John Bogle is no dummy. Bill Bernstein is no dummy. But they all advocated passive investing, didn't they? They can't explain it. I've asked a number of them. Explain it. Tell me. Why do you think it's okay not to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels? The best answer I ever got was the one from Scott Burns, who said, it is information people don't want to hear. He didn't say I was wrong. He said, Rob, you know, let's not talk about that. It's information people don't want to hear. Why is it information people don't want to hear? Why do people not want to know the truth about stock investing? Given the financial consequences that follow from not knowing the truth, because they don't want to be out of step. They don't want to be weirdos. They don't want to be odd. We would rather lose 50% of our life savings than be thought of by our friends and by ourselves as weirdos, oddballs, screw-ups. Have I insulted you yet? It's not my intent to insult you. My intent is to, you know, make you a better informed consumer of stocks. What's that company? The I can't remember the name of the company. The informed consumer is our best customer. Sims? Maybe that's only in Philadelphia. I don't know. Is it a clothing or a furniture store? I don't know. They had a marketing slogan. The informed consumer is our best customer. The informed stock buyer is my best customer. You can't learn how to invest in stocks effectively until you understand that the primary thing that causes you to make investing decisions is your desire not to be out of step, not to be a weirdo, not to be an oddball, not to be a screw-up. It's extremely unfortunate that passive investing was promoted as a responsible way to invest for many years. But that's done. Nothing we can do about it today. We destroyed our economy by telling people that they had three times the amount of money they really had, so that when market prices returned to normal, people had to cut back on vacations and cars and houses, and the economy collapsed. And the collapse of the economy means that people have lost their jobs, and people have lost their businesses, and people have lost their homes. All of that is sad as sad can be. But there's a good side to this story. And the good side is, now that we know that we can destroy the economy by repeating bad stock advice relentlessly for years and years and years, we know what works. We know how it's done. Here is a modest proposal. How about if we take that power, the power that has been used to destroy, and we put it to constructive, positive use? What if, instead of telling people every day for 20 years, you can't time the market, 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 what if instead of saying that, we tell people the truth about stock investing, which is, you must time the market. 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 For 20 years. What will happen? What will happen is, anyone who comes along trying to con us into thinking that we don't need to change our stock allocation when prices get to insane levels won't be able to get to first base. There are a lot of people who understand that overvaluation of stocks is what caused the economic crisis, or at least that it was the primary cause. But the sad thing is that when people come to understand that, they almost inevitably adopt the cynical viewpoint, which is that, yeah, I mean, there are many people that don't realize it. Many people to this day believe in passive investing. The majority believe in passive investing. That's after the price crash. But there are many who do understand. But of the vast majority who understand, most adopt a cynical viewpoint, which is, it's too bad, but that's the way humans are. Humans always screw it up. They always create bubbles. They always destroy the economy. and we're just going to have to go through the pain and start over. And I don't buy into either camp. I certainly don't buy into the passive investing camp. The idea of giving people investing advice that has never in history worked has always brought bone-crushing losses to everyone who followed it. Every time it's been tried, the idea of putting forward that investing advice is, well, I physically can't do it. I've had people threaten to kill me unless I would go along with the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and I've told them I can't do it. I can't do it. Not among my friends. I suppose if someone offers me $1 million, there comes a point at which all of us can be bought, maybe. I like to think not, but I'm not a saint. But I couldn't do it among friends. You know, when you post at discussion boards, you're not doing it for money. You're doing it with your friends. And these people are telling me to say this to my friends, to people, you know, that I've been posting with for years. People who I know their stories. I know their stories about raising their kids. I know what kind of jobs they have. I know what kind of hopes they have for financial freedom. And I'm supposed to tell them that I believe this gibberish? Knowing the harm it does? No. Now that I can't do. That I cannot do. But the question is there an alternative? Some will just say, well, it's always been this way. People bid stocks up to insane prices. It's happened 4 times in the United States. The average price dropped the first 3 times was 68%. This time, so far, 60%. We may be seeing a lot more because the price went a lot higher this time. So we're just going to have to live with it. But this here's the killer. This is why I'm a little worked up. I just got off, there was a post of the Frugal Dad blog, and I put up a comment, and I like the Frugal Dad blog, and I'm being a little critical of the post here, but I understand. I'm sympathetic. I understand, but the post was about, there's a guy at, I think it's CNBC. I don't know the guy's name. If I guess, I'll probably get it wrong. Is it, if I say Neil Carduto or something, that's probably wrong. But he was on the, he had some kind of rant. He was on the floor of the stock market. You know, so, I'm pretty sure I have the name wrong. But they had, somebody had some kind of rant. I think they featured it on Drudge, and that's how it got all this play. And the guy basically said he was criticizing some legislation that Obama has come forward with. And the legislation is to, I guess it's, I don't know, it's to do something to help people who can't pay their mortgages. And he was saying, oh, it's not right because they're taking money from people who have paid their mortgages and giving it to people who, you know, the guy said giving it to losers, but, you know, that was extremely harsh language. But the point was giving it to people who, I guess he would say, people who did irresponsible things. People who bought houses they can't afford. So the people who pay their mortgages shouldn't be having to pay the people who don't. And he said, you know, contracts should be honored, this kind of thing. Now, I get the point. My guess is that just about all of us get the point. You know, if you took a survey, and you said, you know, what percentage of the U.S. population thinks that people shouldn't have to pay their mortgages? People should not have to honor their financial obligations. My guess is, you know, I can't imagine more than 10% would go along with that. So, the guy making the rant is in a sense, he has 90% support. But he doesn't have 90% support in his opposition to what the Obama administration is proposing. So why is that? Why is it that so many people are supporting a bill to help people pay their mortgages when we all believe in, you know, the free market and you know, responsibility and this sort of thing? It's because what we see appear before our eyes does not match the principle involved. The principle involved is financial responsibility. The principle is, of course, you should honor your obligations. If you signed on the dotted line, you should now pay the money or lose the house. That's the principle. The reality is, we all know people who can't honor their obligations, who intended to. And we all sort of are thinking in the back of our heads, or at least a lot of us are, we're thinking in the back of our heads, there but for the grace of God go I. And it's a little hard to be harsh with these people when you can imagine yourself in their shoes, and it's pretty much roll of the dice. I always worry that I'm not controversial enough. So I'm gonna up the controversy meter here. Let's bring in abortion. Let's bring in abortion. I'm not gonna take sides. There's limits. There's limits to how far I'll take this. But I remember reading these little facts always interest me. I'm a journalist, and you know, I've self-published a book, and I'm always interested in people, you know, the book-selling industry, because all journalists want to write books, really. And I remember reading once a little write-up that said, there's never been a best-selling book on abortion. And abortion's a big issue. You know, Roe v. Wade was in 74, so 84, 94, it's over 35 years. No, is it 35 years or more than that? 74, 84, 94. 35 years, I guess. That it's been a raging controversy. I think it's strange. You know, there have been best-selling books on the Vietnam War. There have been best-selling books on, I don't know, all kinds of topics. You know, there's best-selling books on people climbing the Alps. There's best-selling books on atheism today. You know, there are best-selling books on Peanuts cartoons. I mean, there are best-selling books on rock musicians. There's never been a best-selling book on abortion. Why is that? People are very conflicted about it. Now, some people are not conflicted at all. You know, there's a group of people that, you know, are activists, and you know, there are people on both sides, and there are people who don't have any conflict. You know, just abortion is murder, and that's the end of the story. And then there's people who say abortion is a woman's right, and that's the end of the story. But most of us are somewhere in the middle of those rock-solid extremes. So I think part of the problem is that, you know, in order to sell a book, you have to push people's emotional buttons. And the emotional buttons on abortion, the primary emotional button on abortion, I think, that everybody has is make it go away. nobody wants to hear about it. So it's hard to write a book that, you know, makes that satisfies that emotional need that we not hear about it. Your book would have to be, you know, this book doesn't say anything about abortion. That's about the only title that would sell. I always thought, you know, Bill Clinton, I thought he had a saying, and I thought it was genius politics when he said, I want to make abortion safe, legal, and rare. You know, that I don't know if that was done based on political polls, but I think everybody wants it to be safe. Not everybody, but just about. Nobody wants the woman to get hurt that has an abortion. So safe is a winner. Not everybody wants it to be legal, but a lot of people do. And that's obviously the position he had. But rare, you know, that was the political winner because we all want it to be rare. We want it to be, a lot of us want it to be legal, but we all want it to be rare. Very, very few don't want abortion to be rare. Of course, the whole dilemma is if you make it legal, it's not going to be rare. That's the dilemma. But I guess the point I brought this up is the principle that abortion is a bad thing is a widely endorsed principle. And I say even Bill Clinton endorsed it when he said he wanted abortion to be rare. Bill Clinton's, you know, I don't think you'd call him an anti-abortion politician, but he wants it to be rare. But the problem is the principle comes into conflict with the flesh and blood reality that, you know, all of us have at some point known a woman who was in a situation where she was pregnant and having the child was going to be, you know, problematic in the extreme. So that causes conflict. I guess the point I'm trying to get at here is we're going through this angst today. And I read these articles on investing and you know, every day and people want to fit it into these ideological boxes. And some people say, well, you know, everything Obama's doing is wrong because all he's doing is stopping the free market from dealing with the problem. You know, I just read an article like this morning. The guy basically said, you know, the recession's going to last 2 or 3 years, and it's going to cause a lot of pain, and then it'll be over. And any stimulus, any bailout is just going to slow it down and make it more painful, make it last longer. And there are lots of people who believe that. But then there are other people saying that what Obama did was the perfect mix. And then there are other people saying, well, the only problem is Obama didn't spend enough because he's going to have to spend 5 times this to really end it. And the worst thing is to spend a lot of money and not fix the problem because you have to keep coming back to the well. But of course, if you spend 5 times, you know, do you have any free market left? If all of our money goes to the government to fund the remedy for the problems caused by the free market, what's left of the free market? And I don't want to sound arrogant, but I really think the answer is a whole lot more simple than people are making it out to be. People are going through all this angst, in my opinion. Please, I'm not God, but I'm going to tell you what I think. The problem is so much easier to solve than that. It's better to have the free market make most decisions, but there's a place for government. And the place for government is when the free market can't do it. The free market can't do some things well. You know, I would not want to buy food at the grocery store if there were nobody checking the food to see that it's not poisoned. I don't think that most people at the grocery store want to poison me. But if there were no government involved, sooner or later, there would be some idiot who would say, you know, I can save a nickel, you know, on every can of soup if I don't check it. You know, if I don't run tests on the ingredients and some other idiot would poison it and I'd die from it, or my kids would. So, you know, maybe according to some principle, it would be better if the government didn't inspect our food. But in the real world, you know, having the government inspect the food makes sense. And having the government enforce the traffic regulations makes sense. And having the government, you know, build an army makes sense. Having the government put out fires makes sense. Having the government protect the environment makes sense. So the question, you know, we can't talk about investing anymore without talking about politics. I don't really want to take political positions as a partisan positions, but this is a political issue today. When our investing system gets so messed up that it causes an economic collapse, the foul up in our investing rules becomes a political question. And the foul up in our investing system is passive investing. I'm sorry if it gets monotonous for me to keep saying it, but until we fix the problem won't go away. Passive investing makes no sense. It's never worked. It never can work. So we've got to deal with it. And I always think about this. How do we deal with it? And I think in order to deal with it, you've got to think about, you know, in order to deal with the problem, you have to think what caused the problem. And on this question, I will say, I do believe I am the world's expert. What caused the problem? Not that I don't at all think I'm the smartest person in the field even close. But because of my life experience, because of the experience I had during the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, I have had personal contact with thousands upon thousands of people who are intelligent and who have every reason in the world to want to understand how stock investing works. John Graney is the leader of the Campaign of Terror against our boards, and John Graney told me on a discussion board yesterday or the day before, he lost well in excess of $1 million in the stock crash. He didn't have to lose that money. If he understood how stock investing works, he wouldn't have lost that money. Now, you're not going to tell me that John Graney did that, you know, to get even with Hocus for pointing out that he got the numbers wrong in his study. You know, there's a saying, there's a saying from the Bible. I don't know much of the Bible. Every time I bring it up, I feel I have to apologize because when I quote the Bible, I'm always afraid I'm going to get it wrong. But there's a few quotes that have been repeated so many times, they've even gotten through my head. You know, Jesus up on the cross, he says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." That's the thought that came into my mind when I heard about John Graney losing well in excess of $1 million. By his own account, "Father, forgive him, he knows not what he does." He doesn't mean to destroy our boards. He just can't help it. He can't stand the thought that he lost that $1 million because he's dumb. I don't mean intellectually dumb. He's not intellectually dumb. He can't stand to think that he lost it for no good reason. He wants to think there's some kind of reason. The only reason is he believes you don't have to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. And he's lost well in excess of $1 million because of that idiotic belief. And he's not an idiot. And he's obviously not the only one. There are millions of us in that circumstance. And we're all idiots, babe. We're all idiots. We've got to acknowledge it. And this is why I don't like this pose that this guy adopted in this rant that was played up on Drudge, where the guy's saying, oh, I don't want to pay for somebody else's mortgage. You know, I don't, you know, why should the good guys pay for what the bad guys did? We're all idiots. The babe comes from the Bob Dylan song, Idiot Wind, in case there's anybody who didn't follow. We're all idiots, babe. Can we admit that we're all idiots? There are no good guys. If the guy doing the rant is such a good guy, why didn't he speak up about passive investing? I put up a post at the Motley Fool site May 13th, 2002, pointing out that the retirement studies that everybody uses to plan their retirement, quoted in Wall Street Journal, Motley Fool, Morningstar, everywhere, are analytically invalid. The numbers are nowhere even close to being right. It's not that they don't make a sufficient adjustment for valuations. They make zero adjustment. Numbers are wildly off the mark. At the top of the bubble, they were saying a 4% withdrawal rate was 100% safe. And when you do the numbers properly, the 4% withdrawal had a 30% chance of working. Those retirements are 30% safe, and they were saying 100%. There's no sane person who can argue that a retirement that has only a 30% chance of working out is safe. But it's 7 years have passed, and not one of those studies has been corrected to this day. And Motley Fool has banned discussion of the errors made in those studies. So, is Motley Fool a bunch of idiots? Morningstar has banned discussion of the errors in those studies. Is Morningstar a bunch of idiots? Bogleheads.org has banned discussion of the errors in those studies. Is Bogleheads.org a bunch of idiots? IndexUniverse.com has banned discussion of the errors in those studies. Is IndexUniverse.com a bunch of idiots? Yes, 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 yes. We're all a bunch of idiots. The thing that is most sad about it isn't that we're idiots. You know, that comes easy. That's a natural state. We're all born idiots, and so if we hadn't learned something, obviously, we're going to be idiots about it. And passive investing is the dominant model, so the odds are, you know, 90% of the experts are telling us this, so it's not hard to understand why we all believe it. We shouldn't be embarrassed to be idiots. The experts are idiots. But the sad part is that we haven't yet worked up the courage to acknowledge that we're idiots. And that's, of course, the step we're going to have to take if we're ever going to stop being idiots. And I think I have the answer. I can tell you the answer. It's in the title of this podcast. You won't believe the truth about stock investing until you hear it 5,000 times. What's the answer? The answer is, we need to sell what works. Rob Bennett writing an article at his website telling people what works in stock investing isn't going to do the job. It doesn't do the job. You know, John Russell had a note at his website just last week, you know, saying Hocus was right. And he says, you know, Rob has been, you know, smeared all over the internet, but he's right. His investing advice is better than the advice given by John Bogle and Bill Bernstein. I'm happy that he said that. But I know I'm right. And again, I don't mean to be arrogant, but I know I'm right because I've looked at the historical data. All I've ever done, I don't even have an opinion on how to invest in an ultimate sense. All I've ever done is to report what the historical data says. I just report what works. I'm a reporter, not an investing expert. So there's never been any question in my mind that I was right. I knew I was right. And look, John Woodall Russell is the greatest person I've ever met on the internet. He spent 7 years doing research that helps us all and got paid not a penny for it. But I knew I was right before John ever did any research. His research is wonderful. It fleshes out the realities. I wouldn't want to live without it. But I knew I was right before he ever did the research. How did I know I was right? And I can prove this. It's not just me saying it. Check the post archives. Go back to the early days of the discussions. And I didn't even know who John Walter Russell was on the morning of May 13th, 2002. I didn't even know his name. So I'm not right because John Walter Russell has proven me right, and I'm not right because Bill Bernstein has said I'm right about safe withdrawal rates or because Scott Burns has said I'm right. And I'm not right because, you know, hundreds of people have written into me saying thanks for, you know, finally telling me the truth about stock investing. That's not what makes me right. What makes me right is common sense. How could the price of stocks not affect the long-term value proposition of stocks? I mean, come on. It's not even possible. The price you pay for something affects the value proposition of that something. When you buy stocks at insanely dangerous prices, you're not going to get a good long-term return, people. I don't mean to insult people, but there's no way to say it that's not insulting. It's a big insult to the human race that we even have these discussions. I think it's the single biggest problem we have. What we have to do to solve our economic crisis is we have to admit this problem. And if the problem were hard to understand, we'd be able to admit it. Some smart person would come along and they'd write an explanation that everybody would understand. And everybody'd say, "Eureka, he's got it." We could all admit we were wrong, and we could all get about the business of figuring out what's right. But the problem is the mistake we made is so dense. It's so pathetic that it's insulting, and we don't want to hear it. So I have to figure out, how do I get people to acknowledge something that's painfully obvious, but devastating to the humans who fall for it, you know, causes huge financial misery, but yet is so painfully obvious that, you know, a 7-year-old child could understand it. How do I explain that? And the answer is, you know, it's the reverse of the podcast title. I say you won't believe the truth about stock investing until you hear it 5,000 times. Well, the reverse would be to say the reason why you believe in passive investing is because you've heard it endorsed 5,000 times. The reason why you believe you can't time the market is because you've heard that 5,000 times. The whole problem is that humans don't act rationally. We don't buy toothpaste by picking up the two tubes of toothpaste and doing some sort of analysis as to which one is better. We don't choose Coke or Pepsi based on a taste test. I remember when I was a kid, my older brother did a trick on me one time. There was some sort of chocolate sauce that I thought was better, you know, I don't know, Bosco's or Hershey. And I said, "Well, I like Bosco's better, you know." And he says, "I don't think Bosco's any better than Hershey. It's the same thing." And I said, "No, it's close, but Bosco's better." And he said, "You think so, huh?" He says, "You know, we're going to cover your eyes. And I'm going to make two glasses of chocolate milk, one with Bosco and one with Hershey. And You tell me which one you're sipping from. And I couldn't do it. I thought with my heart, mind, and soul that Bosco was better, but I was wrong. They were the same. But I guess Bosco must have had a good advertisement, must have had a good television commercial, because I bought it. That's what happened with passive investing. The people who came up with passive investing made a mistake. There were studies done that showed that short-term timing doesn't work. It was a big breakthrough. People didn't know that before. And when the people discovered this, lots of people got very excited. And they said, hey, we've got to plan a whole investing model based on this. But they forgot. They didn't focus on the fact that there's a difference between short-term timing and long-term timing. They just heard timing doesn't work. They were so excited, they didn't really stop to think about it. And then they did build an entire model around it. But of course, they got it wrong. They said timing doesn't work when the reality is timing is required. Long-term timing. Short-term timing doesn't work, but long-term timing is required. And then they promoted this. And of course, they spent millions of dollars with good intent, with the idea of spreading the word about what they had learned, but what they thought they had learned was wrong. And so for 30 years, we've been getting it drilled into our head, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work. And so instead of following our natural reaction when prices went to insanely dangerous levels of selling stocks, which would have brought prices back down to reasonable levels, we were all hearing, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work. So we didn't sell, and the price just kept going higher. And it went higher than it's ever gone in history. And the last time it got nearly this high, the price drop was 80%. And we had the Great Depression. This time we went a lot higher than that. So we're in a big heap of trouble. But that doesn't mean we can't get out of it. I've got a calculator that's going to be coming up at my website in a month or so, I hope, that will show you that if you just switch to the rational model today, it's like having a 50% increase in your portfolio amount. The calculator shows that if you invest $100,000 following the rational model, you'll get better results at the end of 30 years than if you invest $150,000 using the passive model. So you get a 50% increase in your portfolio size just by making this switch to a rational model. Well, what if everybody did that? Everybody would start feeling better about this crash. Everybody would feel like they hadn't lost all the retirement money. They got the money back. I just saw a clip. I think it was talking about this guy's rant. And who was it that? Chris Matthews. And he was talking about the guy who did this rant. And Chris Matthews said to him, what everybody wants is to get their money back. Well, you can get their money back. I can't give it back to you today, obviously. I can't hand you a stack of money. But I can give you a strategy that will give you the equivalent return over 30 years. It takes 30 years for the money to actually be back in your hand. But the point is, you'll have a whole lot more money at the end of 30 years than you will if you keep following the passive model. And the gain will be enough to make up for the mistake you made when you fell for the passive investing model. That, to me, is a real solution to our crisis. Our crisis is a crisis of confidence. Tell people that they'll be able to retire on time and you've solved it. But the point is to do that. You can't get there without us admitting we made mistakes. And we can't get there, you know, turning it into an ideological battle. Free market versus government intervention. Sure, it's great to have the free market do it. But the free market was irresponsible. There are responsibilities that come when you sell stocks. the responsibilities that come when we tell middle-class workers to finance their own retirements by investing in stocks, by setting up 401k plans. There are responsibilities that go with that. And we failed in those responsibilities. We failed miserably. Any investing model that gets the numbers we use to plan our retirements wrong and that doesn't correct them for 7 years is a failed model. You know, part of it is we're going to have some kind of amnesty. We're going to have to let people know that we're not out to cut their heads off. But what I'm seeing is people trying to cut people's heads off. People are saying, oh, you know, the bankers did this, and Bernie Madoff did this. And then they say, oh, but it's not really Bernie Madoff. It's the SEC, because the people told the SEC about it, and the SEC didn't do anything. And, oh, it's the politicians that appointed people to the SEC, and on and on and on. And are we all going to shoot everybody? Is that going to solve the problem? It couldn't have happened. Whoever this guy was who gave the rant, it couldn't have happened without his contributing to it in some way. I don't know exactly what his role is. But yeah, the bankers had a part in it, and the SEC had a part in it, and the politicians had a part in it, and the economist had a part in it, and the stock experts had a part in it, and the mutual fund companies had a part in it, and the journalist had a part in it, and the middle class investors had a part in it. None of these people could have gotten away with it if we weren't sitting on our hands when they were telling us this gibberish. You don't have to change your stock allocation when prices get to insanely dangerous levels. We're grown-ups. If you're smart enough to earn the money, to put money into the stock market, you're smart enough to know that that one can't fly in the real world. And I don't, you know, again, I'm going to take this full circle and shut it down. I'm not trying to insult you. I'm trying to insult you just enough to get you to hear the problem, just enough to get through your radar, just enough to get through your defenses. But I know it's not a lack of intelligence, because I know that a lot of people that endorse this stuff are highly intelligent people. But the answer is, we don't use our intelligence on all decisions. When you're buying a tube of toothpaste, you don't have any idea whether Crest or Colgate is better. You're going based on a commercial. You're going based on how many times you were told, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Colgate or whatever it is. We've all been told 9 out of 10 investing experts recommend passive investing. And most of us don't study the details. So when 9 out of 10 recommend it, that's where the money goes. But we can use that power. We can use the fact that people are influenced by repetition to sell rational investing principles, not passive principles. The other thing, you know, I said early on, there were two things in advertising that sell, and one is repetition, and the other one is appeal to the emotion. And passive investing was sold to us through appeal to the emotion. It was promoted as a long-term strategy when it's really a short-term strategy. It only works in out-of-control bull markets. It was promoted as a prudent strategy when it's a reckless strategy. Passive investing is responsible for these old-school studies that have caused millions of busted retirements. But we can use the fact that people are looking for prudent strategies, prudent long-term strategies. It was sold as being supported by the academic research, when the reality is, for 28 years, the academic research has shown that valuations affect long-term returns. But we can use the fact that people are looking for a prudent long-term strategy backed by the academic research. We can use that to sell rational investing. And then we don't have these out-of-control bull markets anymore. And if we don't have the out-of-control bull markets anymore, we don't have the stock crashes anymore. And if we don't have the stock crashes anymore, we don't have the economic crises anymore. And that doesn't mean we can wrap it all up in one day. But it does mean we can have hope. Once we talk about the real problem and address it, we feel better about the future because we know we've solved the problem. It doesn't mean that everything's going to be fixed in one day. It means that we're walking in the right direction, and it's all the difference in the world to be walking in the right direction versus walking in the wrong direction. So what we need to do is to take that power. We've learned the power of repetition. We've learned what drives stock investing decisions. It's advertising, it's marketing, it's repetition, it's appeal to the emotion. Let's use it for constructive purposes and undo the damage that passive investing has done to us over the past 30 years. Let me know your thoughts, please. Click the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.